Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Outer Space Background Checks Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On October 5th, 2010, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in NASA versus Nelson. The case presents the question of whether a prospective federal government contract employee is protected by a constitutional right of informational privacy from having the government ask, in the course of a background investigation, whether the prospective employee has received counseling or treatment for illegal drug use that has occurred in the past year, or from the prospective employee's designated references for any adverse information that may have a bearing on the employee's suitability for employment at a federal facility. The Privacy Act, 5 U.S.C. 552A, would restrict disclosure of obtained information to third parties. To discuss the case, we have University of Arkansas at Little Rock, William H. Bowen School of Law Professor Richard J. Peltz. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Peltz.
This is a podcast for the Federalist Society about NASA v. Nelson. And this case goes back, and the facts relate to 9/11 and the commission report coming out of 9/11 released in 2004, in which one of the recommendations made to the federal government was to standardize access to federal facilities. As a result of that recommendation, the president was led to issue a directive in the Commerce Department to take action in 2005, which got prompted agency heads, including NASA, to comply with the standardized federal facility access requirements by extending the use of background checks and extending, for purposes of this case, specifically to so-called low-risk contract employees. And using the standard Form 85 the federal government has and the Form 42 in this background check process. This affected Caltech, which is the contractor for the federal government that runs the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, JPL, and has for NASA since 1959. The facility is owned by NASA but staffed by Caltech employees, and NASA changed its contract in 2007 with Caltech to require that these employees be subject to this more extensive background check through the SF-85 and Form 42. 28 employees of Caltech at JPL, which included administrative personnel and scientists, found that they were unhappy with this extended background check and the questions being asked about their personal lives. And these include some personnel who are, as NASA says, low risk, which means they have little to no effect on security or access to secure facilities. It includes theoreticians working on subjects such as the origins of the universe, quantum fluids, studying comets. And these individuals challenged the use of the background checks on a number of grounds in the lower courts. The challenges coming to the Supreme Court are under the constitutional right, as they see it, of informational privacy. There are three aspects, as a matter of fact, there are three aspects to the background check procedure that were at issue in this case. The standard Form 85, the SF-85, asks employees about illegal drug use for 1 year prior. And specifically, in that question, says that the employee should include information about treatment and counseling, which might arguably implicate medical or psychological counseling information. Second, the government sends Form 42 to former employers, landlords, and references listed by the contract employee. And that Form 42 has some open-ended questions that ask for the reference to say anything that might be adverse about the employee. And it invites, specifically invites, derogatory, so-called derogatory as well as positive comments. And then third, the government, when it gets back this information, conducts a suitability determination in which the respondent employees make much ado about this in their brief, but the Ninth Circuit and the district court would not address the suitability determination. They said that that question was not ripe because the suitability determinations had not yet been made, and in fact, even the criteria had not yet been set, and the court on Tuesday took only a passing interest in that question. So importantly, also as a matter of procedure, this case comes to the Supreme Court on a grant of preliminary injunction, And that could be important because it would give the Supreme Court a way to resolve the case without reaching the merits. The Ninth Circuit conceded that there was not a very strong case for the plaintiffs because of the ill-defined nature of the informational privacy right, but that the hardships on the employees went very much in their favor because they were facing the pain of firing if they failed to fill out these forms, or if they did fill out the forms, the disclosure of private information would occur. And so the Ninth Circuit reversing the district court, and that was the Central District of California, reversing the district court found that preliminary injunction was warranted. The constitutional rights at issue here are really at the heart of the case and the most interesting part of the case. Those are the informational privacy rights. Previous case law has established informational privacy rights in the penumbras and emanations of the Bill of Rights, and those have been set out to include a right as against public disclosure of information or the disclosure of personal information, and a right of sort of personal autonomy and decision making. The right of personal autonomy is what leads to the abortion cases and some other lines of case law, and that autonomy right is not what is at issue here. What is at issue here is the disclosure, right against disclosure. That right has been treated sparsely by the Supreme Court. There are two key cases that both sides recognize. Those are both coming out of 1977, Whalen v. Roe and Nixon v. GSA. The Whalen case was a New York program in which narcotic prescription information was reported to about patients was reported to the New York State Health Department. And Nixon, the former president, did not want national archivists poring over personal content in recordings. In both cases, the court found that there were adequate safeguards against public disclosure. And so in both cases, the court found that the informational privacy right as against disclosure was not sufficiently jeopardized to stop the government action. And that is interesting because in this case, what is really at stake, the respondent contract employees are arguing that the disclosure right is implicated by the government's collection of information, not actually by public disclosure. And so it is an argument for something of an expansion of the disclosure right. On the public disclosure side of things, there is the Privacy Act, which the government is quick to say will prevent any public disclosures. The Privacy Act comes into play in two ways on these facts. One is that it limits the collection of personal information about individuals to an extent necessary and authorized by law, and then the Privacy Act limits subsequent disclosures. Now, the first function is not implicated because we have here the government directives to collect this information that are authorized by law. The second function on the limitation on disclosures does cut in favor of the government. The respondents have argued in their brief that the Privacy Act is extremely flawed, it's porous, it has exemptions for so-called routine use disseminations, and that won't be an adequate safeguard. They were joined in that argument by many amici, including the Electronic Privacy Information Center, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, but the court did not seem keen on hearing much about the Privacy Act in this oral argument because, of course, no public disclosure has yet occurred, and that might give rise to an as-applied challenge in the future. So the novel argument engaged by the Ninth Circuit was that the right to informational privacy, which is admittedly styled in the courts as a right to control information about oneself, implicates limits on the collection of government information as opposed to the public disclosure of information the government has collected. Now, that right has been recognized before in the lower courts, some sort of limitation on the collection of government information. But it's only recognized, it seems, in cases in which some other fundamental right has been implicated. So, for example, if the government seeks to collect information about an employee's sexual practices, that might indicate an infringement on 14th Amendment liberty rights. The government might be limited in asking about what kind of library books someone checks out, because that could limit the First Amendment right to receive information. Privacy, informational privacy, might be implicated in a case in which the government seeks to know what organizations an employee belongs to, as that might infringe on the First Amendment right of association. Here, it's not clear that there is a companion fundamental right in these questions about drug use, drug counseling, I should say, and then the open-ended questions made to the references. Though the respondents, the contract employees, do argue that the information asked for about drug counseling is sufficiently medical in nature as to come within the 14th Amendment liberty interest. So the case reaches the Supreme Court with this effort by the respondents to preserve through the preliminary injunction this informational privacy right, and what really is an expansion in the Supreme Court's, or what would be an expansion in the Supreme Court's recognition of the informational privacy right to reach the government collection of information. And I think significantly in the analysis of this case are a number of distinctions that can be made between this case and maybe one that might implicate government, might implicate civil rights interests. And these distinctions were listed by Judge Kosinski in the Ninth Circuit on a dissent from denial of rehearing en banc, and then these distinctions are reiterated in petitioner's brief. And Judge Kosinski indicated first that one thing the Ninth Circuit failed to account for was the difference between collection and disclosure, and that, as I've indicated, is an arguable distinction in this right to informational privacy, where it's not clear the right covers collection of information absent the implication of some other fundamental interests. A second distinction Judge Kosinski wanted to draw was between voluntary and compelled disclosure. It's not entirely clear here. There's argument over the extent to which the disclosure is voluntary or compelled. The employees are told that they do not have to complete SF 85, but they're at the same time told by JPL that they'll be fired if they fail to secure the adequate credentials from NASA. And so it looks a lot like compelled, although there is a question as to government employment and the right privilege doctrine. The third distinction Kosinski drew was the difference between an informational right with the implication of a coordinate fundamental right as against disclosure, and what Kosinski described as a freestanding right not to have the world know bad things about you. And that's obviously a description with some negative connotation, and has been repeated in the government's briefs as to describe what respondents are asking for. And indeed, I think the court will be very unwilling to embrace some sort of broad freestanding right not to have the world know bad things about you. A fourth distinction Kosinski drew was between collection of information from individuals and collection from third parties. And this marks a distinction between the SF-85 and the Form 42 processes. And Form 42, of course, is asking these open-ended questions about employees of third parties. And in the Fourth Amendment area, there is the fairly strong U.S. v. Miller distinction where the Fourth Amendment interests are not implicated when the government goes to collect your bank records or your AT&T telephone records. And you're said not to have this legitimate expectation of privacy under the Fourth Amendment in these records maintained by third parties, even if your trust in those third parties was misplaced. And the Ninth Circuit declined to extend Miller to this area of informational privacy, and there's certainly a question as to whether that was a correct decision in declining to extend Miller. And finally, Kosinski drew a distinction that might be very important between the government's role as regulator and the government's role as employer. The government here acting as employer obviously has been given broad latitude in previous cases, such as Garcetti v. Ceballos in the First Amendment area. And the fact that government is acting as employer might give it additional latitude that the Ninth Circuit did not really account for, as opposed to a situation where the government is simply walking up to people in the street and saying, tell me private things about you. These are people whose employment with the government is at issue. And that does indicate the classic distinction between the right privilege doctrine and unconstitutional conditions doctrine. So the oral argument occurred on Tuesday. And if there was much doubt before the oral argument, it seems the government really did get the better of the day. Justice Sotomayor asked right off the bat, started questioning the Solicitor General as to whether there are any limits on the information that government can ask for. And Sotomayor was determined in this line of questioning. But at the same time, I'd say most of the questions from the justices of the solicitor, acting solicitor general, were I'd describe as half-hearted. It seemed that there were great concerns on the court about a couple of things. One of those was the implications of striking down the use of these standardized forms in the government background check process. The Solicitor General gave some numbers. For example, 74,000 government contractors have had these forms applied to them in the last 5 years. Only 128 federal credentials have been denied in only 128 cases. Never, according to the government, has one of those denials occurred for a positive answer to the drug treatment question. Justice Kennedy even described, and we might think Justice Kennedy's vote could be key in such a case, Justice Kennedy described this informational privacy right in a question as ill-defined or undefined privacy right, indicating some skepticism of it. Justice Scalia, as we might predict, made much ado about the lack of a privacy right in the Constitution, not really wanting to even recognize the privacy right that was set out by Whalen and Nixon in the previous cases, or skeptical of it. Scalia said, for example, "I also think it's nice that the government should pay a living wage to its employees, but I don't feel that I'm authorized to go around saying how much that is. Rather, that should be a determination of Congress." There was confusion between the court and the Solicitor General in establishing what exactly should be the standard, whether there's a heightened scrutiny or a rational basis review of informational privacy collection challenges. I think leading to great skepticism on the court that this case could be resolved in favor of the respondents. I think it likely that the case will come out in favor of the government, therefore, and possibly, very likely, on a narrow ground, such as that there was not sufficient establishment of this constitutional right and the infringement of a constitutional right that would justify issuing the preliminary injunction at this point and sending the case back on that basis. It will take a lot more doing for the courts left and right, from Sotomayor's position of great concern about the government's questioning of employees to Scalia's confidence in the legislatures to handle the issue. It will take great doing for the court to find some sort of middle ground there on which it could carve out and define a right of informational privacy in the collection context, in the information collection context. So it seems to me quite unlikely that the court would endeavor to do that right now. And that is where we stand. One last note, Justice Kagan recused. She authored the reply brief from the government in this case, and so she was not present for the oral argument. It will be interesting to see in the future, as we get more cases in privacy and technology, where Justices Sotomayor and Kagan come down. They are, as commentators have noted, justices more familiar with the electronic world than perhaps some justices have been previously. And there will undoubtedly be more cases in this area of privacy and technology. The presence of Amici, EPIC, and EFF in this case are indicative, likewise, of great interest in the area of privacy and technology. So even if the government prevails in the case, it will be interesting to see if there are any separate opinions which suggest where the informational privacy right could go in the future.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.